From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 55 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope grass is greener, and then we're going to talk about our top five examples of grass is greener. But first, as always, I'm your host, Nick, and today we are joined by special guest host
Dan
and Kyle. Kyle?
Yep.
What is that sound in my ears? Is that picking up?
No, I think that's just in your ears.
Okay, good. Then what is new?
I've actually come to the realization this past week that Minecraft is one of my favorite games of all time.
What?
Probably top three. Maybe,
completely agree.
Maybe even number one at this point, because me and Lisa, who she doesn't play games at all, we found ourselves playing that game together a lot, and we actually beat it, which up until like a couple weeks ago, I didn't really know you could do that. But because I've had fun playing that game by myself for like hours and hours and hours. But then once you add just that one other person, it becomes just so much more fun. But, yeah, that game's awesome. That's all I got to say about that.
Awesome.
What about you, Dan?
Well, I watched this movie. It's called The Collection. I mean, it's pretty good if you're into like that whole torture porn kind of movie, but nice. I mean, there's really nothing else to it other than people getting killed and maimed in gruesome
awful
ways.
Yeah.
Right. That's the whole movie.
Nice.
Is it about you, Kyle or Nick?
I don't know. I haven't really done anything. I watched Henry V today. That was good. It's kind of long. It's kind of British-y. I didn't understand a lot of what was going on.
Yeah.
Or a lot of what they were saying, but I understood what was going on. I got the gist of it, I think. There was a war. I think he won at the end, but I'm not positive.
Why did you watch that movie? You just...
Well, it's a famous play. There are famous people in it. I heard it's very good. It has the St. Crispin's Day speech. But, it didn't have subtitles, and that really fucked me up. Coming in, tagging into the show.
His mic's not on yet, though, so.
Mic is not on.
So we got to.
Who could it be?
We got to pause for a second.
It's Sir.
Yep.
Co-host, Sir.
Yeah, just stepped in from the warehouse.
The warehouse. It's a euphemism for.
The hell. Trap. Also known as my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sir, what's new with you?
Managed to throw some deodorant on and freshen up a little bit, kind of. Even though obviously it doesn't matter to the folks listening.
Yeah,
I'm sure the guys here appreciate it.
We're debuting Smell-O-Vision.
We don't mind a little musk.
Yeah, maybe it'd make us maybe get some more reviews. Never know. Yeah.
Who knows?
Musk in the show.
It can't hurt. That's the one thing that the show is missing is musk.
Yeah, it's missing that extra. We've covered the sense of sound. Now we need to cover the sense of scent. So in this week's episode, we're talking about the trope, grass is greener. Kyle.
Yeah.
I know you've really disliked looking stuff up for this trope.
I know. I was hoping that you wouldn't come to me first.
Yep.
Yep.
What's the grass is greener about? What is the saying?
What is the saying? Grass is greener? It's basically you be living in one sort of situation. Usually a negative one, not in like a poor rundown area, and you sort of envy another living style, yeah. Lifestyle that another person or town has.
Yeah. People say that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Some say that has to do with like the optical angle or whatever that you see grass at it, and it actually does appear greener. And then if you go to the other side of the fence, yours would appear greener. Don't think that's what the saying is actually about, though. I think it's a metaphor. Am I right?
So
I would agree.
So is this trope, when you get to the greener side of the fence, is it not it's not as green as you thought it was?
No, I think the trope is just about...
That envy of...
Yeah, or just wanting to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or a specific place, you look at it and you go, if I could be there, everything would be okay.
Yeah.
Dan, what do you think?
I don't necessarily think it's just completely envious, like Kyle was saying. I mean, there's a lot of times where, especially in movies and TV shows, you see characters who are looking for something else, mm-hmm. and then realize at the end what they had was perfectly fine for them anyway. Everything else was just, you know, pipe dreams, basically. It would never come to fruition or work.
Yeah, I think that the first thing I think of, and maybe I don't have a list, so this one isn't. Is Clockers and Mekhi Phifer. You know, he has that. If you guys remember that movie, it's got Mekhi Phifer. Who's that? Robert Duvall.
Never seen it.
Like it's kind of like it's from the 90s, and it's about just this one neighborhood and a group of drug dealers. And the main character is this kid who he has like stomach ulcers. He's always like drinking Yoo-Hoo to try to take care of it. He's just you can tell he doesn't really want to be in that sort of lifestyle. He's just kind of stuck there. It's based on a book, and he has this like he basically looks at like train sets. He looks at like traveling stuff, and he's like really obsessed with trains. So for him the grass is greener, basically traveling away and doing something else. And I'm gonna spoil a 20-year-old movie. In the end, you know, he stops leaving
the clown
on a train and he goes somewhere better. It seems to me like is the trope that the trope kind of could be more than just a character,
but ultimately like representing the escape.
I think it could, like, I'm just pulling it up, and it seems the first thing, a character lives in pretty terrible conditions. So it kind of, I think the trope is used either to show that they feel they're in terrible conditions or to show they actually are. So I'm just kind of jumping in.
Yeah. I like what Dan was saying.
Probably completely rambling.
I like what Dan was saying, though, is a lot of this trope, at least in some of the things that I thought of when I was making my list, is it's sometimes just a pipe dream. It's you idealize this thing only because it's different from the situation you're in. But it's that way in life too. People will get into a situation and think, well, when this happens, it'll be better. When I, get this raise, it'll be better. Or when I get this promotion, or when this thing is finished and I can focus on this, it'll be better. And that's not always the case. Sometimes you just need to take control of your life.
Yeah, I think, definitely the one I just mentioned is kind of just anything better, kind of, because obviously the situation was so horrible. So in a lot of these cases, at least, when the situation is bad, it is kind of like that, where it's just like an escape.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, one of my examples, speaking of movies that nobody else in the room has seen, have you guys ever seen Tomcats with Shannon Elizabeth and Gary Busey's kid?
Nope. They let Gary Busey have a kid?
Yeah. Well, basically, the plot of this movie is all these guys make this bet that whoever's the last one to get married wins the pot. So throughout the whole movie, him and his friend are the two last people to not be married. So he's trying to convince Shannon Elizabeth to convince the other guy to get married to her so that he wins. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the movie, he figures out that he actually loves her and he wants to be with her. So it's not necessarily, like I was saying before, not necessarily like an envious thing. Sometimes it's just you trying to do something because you think it's better and then realizing, oh, this was actually better for me in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So his winning the bet would be the grass is always greener. But he finds out that the bet's not what the best is for, mm-hmm. which is a lot of romantic comedies and everything else, too.
Yeah. Kyle, what type of story do you think uses this the best?
Those journey stories, like
the hero's journey, where they
where it's a group of people trying to get to a location that's like this, not necessarily like magical, but it's like the myth, like it's a legend kind of, and they're trying to get there, and then
myth
exactly.
Is that gonna show up on your list?
Probably. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, and then when they get there, it's just like what Dan was saying, how it's not all that it was cracked out to be. Cracked out? Cracked up?
Cracked up.
Cracked up.
Although sometimes it is.
Cracked out.
Sometimes the grass really is
greener. Yeah.
You never know.
And I have an example of that on my list too, kind of. But yeah, I'd say like that journey. I don't know what kind of genre of movie that is, but like the adventure.
But usually story. It's like a dramatic arc. It's not usually done as something comedic. Am I right?
I think it can. You also see this a lot in Disney movies, but yeah. That's also because the main character in like 90% of Disney movies is this rundown sort of poor person who doesn't really fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Right, or it's like a richer person who doesn't fit in and wants to go on events. Somebody who's
just, yeah, like a princess right. who yeah
kids wishes. Movie where the parent where he's like, I don't want to be with the parents anymore. Tell me what to do, and then by the end they realize.
I finally saw Frozen parents. Only like a week or two ago.
Still haven't seen that one.
Me neither.
It's I don't have good, kids. Right? No reason to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. I wouldn't have watched it if. There would be no reason to. However, I mean,
I've heard nothing but
it is,
great things about it, though.
It is the best story Disney's told, like, in a long time, as far as, like it's...
I like, agree. What, since Lion
it's
King?
It's empowering. Yeah, I mean, Lion King was actually good. Like, it's empowering to women. Like, it's meant to girls and stuff. Yeah, it's actually positive. Boo. I was surprised.
Yeah, it did a lot of the stuff that Brave was doing in terms of, like, female gender roles, but I think
only
it did
it
better.
Suck.
Yeah, it did it a lot better.
Which is weird to say because it's Pixar.
I wish they put the two movies together.
DreamWorks? Or who did?
Disney.
Disney.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one either, so I can't tell you they should put them together.
Brave just has that, you know, the bear, you know, that thing. And then Frozen, the scary witch with ice powers together. And I kind of felt the whole time in both movies, like, man, there's like, this is like missing something. Where's the Scar? Where's the Scar? Or like,
right. Scar is a great bad guy.
You know, there's no central villains nowadays.
That's what I like about.
I digress.
That's what I like about Frozen is that the central villain really is also kind of the protagonist.
Yeah.
She's like an anti-heroine, and that there's no like big overarching love story. Or it's. You think there is, and then it's subverted. I think it's great.
I like it. However, what is this? Like art house for kids? Come on.
Yeah. That's we got to start them early. Alrighty. One other thing, speaking of Disney and whatnot, that I want to bring up before we move into our top fives. The Grass is Greener, often associated with the song. Why do you guys think that is?
I think a song is the only, like a really good way to get that feeling across that the character is going through, I guess. Like, yeah, Disney movies. I mean, I don't really know of a lot of other examples off the top of my head.
I think I've got three on my list, actually. Like,
what's the one that Ariel sings in Little Mermaid, Part of Their World?
Part of Your World?
Your
Their
World.
World. Their that World.
That World. Something. Yeah. We're, like, butchering this thing. But, yeah, it's, like, if you can't show it well that they want to be, they live in this other world, it's an easy way to get that out, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, songs are an easy way to show emotion in movies because, yeah, I mean, not every emotion is like crying or screaming at the top of your lungs or anything, but you can't just every movie have a monologue where they suddenly face the audience and tell them, okay, I'm feeling this way. I'm feeling this way, mm-hmm. but you got a song in there and all the lyrics are just exactly what they're feeling at the time. It's kind of like an inner monologue, but to music.
It's a good way to do exposition without going, you know where I'd like to go? Orlando.
Right.
All right. So that is our discussion on The Grass is Greener. Join us after the break, and we'll talk about our top five examples of Grass is Greener.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was going to ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to ruin it. Hope we'll do it next Monday.
No! I'm going to do it now!
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about our top five examples of the trope Grass is Greener. Kyle, what's your number five?
My number five is... what I just mentioned like 2 seconds ago, Little Mermaid and then also Aladdin are the two Disney movies that really stuck out to me. Mostly just because, I don't know, they are those really good examples. I think Aladdin is like a story that gets told a lot where it's this poor person trying to, I guess not necessarily wanting to live that sort of rich life, but they end up finding themselves in it. And, I think that's kind of an example. I wouldn't say that he's not happy being king or prince or whatever his title ends up being, but they do that sort of contrast of poor life and rich, like snotty life, mm-hmm. really well. And then Little Mermaid is a movie that I haven't seen in a very long time, but the fact that she's like, she's such a dreamer and wants to live that life with this beautiful guy. So that's my number five. Not a very good number five, but Dan, what about you? What's your number five?
My number five is the Salute Your Shorts episode, Counselor Budnick. Basically, Budnick makes a bet with Ugg, the camp counselor, that he could be a better counselor. And through being a counselor and having to follow all the rules, like punishing the kids and doing things when they're actually, you know, doing things they're not supposed to, the campers all then hate end up hating him too, just like they do with Ugg. So he starts to realize, okay, power isn't necessarily the better thing. It's just something that's here, and you know, he ultimately learns to respect authority. But you know how at the end it is, or the end at the end, it's nothing really mattered anymore. The next episode doesn't carry over to that kind of stuff, but it works out in that single one there.
Good show.
How about you, sir? What's your number five?
I don't have one. I was supposed to be in this episode.
Oh, sir. All right. My number five, then, is Up There. It's a song from the South Park movie. It's sung by Satan, and it's about how good the world is up there. So I've got three songs coming up. So I'm going to do every other. I'm going to stagger them. But, yeah, this is just one of those. It's a hopeful song, and it's kind of sung in that, like, it has some typical musical song tropes of the long belted out part of the chorus, but it's Satan singing, which makes it funny. Kyle, what's your number four?
Sticking with the animated theme, Toy Story 3 I think is a good example of this too, where they get to that daycare Sunnyside, I think is what it's called. And they see from like across the window this like really amazing experience with these little kids that they're having, and they think it's the most amazing thing ever, and then the little toddlers run into the room and just like throw them all around, and it's like them wanting to be transferred to that room. And I don't know, this trope is hard for me. Dan, what was your number four?
My number four is actually a real world example rather than a movie or a TV show. It's actually the concept of the suburbs, the way most people see them. You have this ideal landscape with big houses and, you know, wonderful, smiling people that are always around. Ultimately, though, the people who move into the suburbs make what it's like, because eventually you get the wrong kind of people in there. Then there's a different suburbs. They move to a different location. So the grass is always going to be greener for most of the population looking into that area and going, oh, it's so ideal and perfect over there. But then just kind of they end up making it what it ultimately is. Mm. How about you, Nick? What's your number four?
My number four, it's from a short film, a Danish short film that actually won the Academy Award for Best Live Action Short this year. It's called Helium, and it's about this guy who, I think he's a janitor who works in like a children's hospital, and he befriends this little kid who's dying of who knows what. But the kid is talking with him, and he mentions like he has no interest in going to heaven. That sounds boring. So in order to give him hope, the guy talks about this place that he names Helium, and he tells this little kid all these stories about how, like, when you die, if you have this, he makes him like a balloon animal of a dog, and he puts it in his window, and he says if you have this in your window, they'll know to take you to Helium. And it's a sweet movie. It wasn't my favorite of the short films from last year, but I liked it. It's nice. Yeah, so Helium, the place, is my number four. Kyle,
nice.
What's your number three?
My number three is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is another movie that does a good job of showing you like both sides of everything. They'll show Charlie Bucket and his lifestyle and living with four grandparents, his parents, and like it's kind of a sad situation that he's in. And then they contrast that with the factory and like a whole room where everything is edible, and it's like the most magical thing ever. But I think that, I don't know if he ever like says that he wants to live. Maybe he does say he wants to live there or like be in that sort of.
They all want to go there. Yeah, like everybody wants to go.
I guess that's
movie
also
is about too. Like this.
Yeah. Wanting to.
Rampant desire of something. You know, yeah. Every person has what they have. All the rich kids are crazy and wanting something. And
despite how terrifying that tunnel scene was.
I posted on Twitter that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is like Seven for kids.
That's a pretty good example, actually. The rowers keep on rowing is pretty disturbing.
Dane, what's your number three?
My number three is actually from The Matrix, because you have this one ideal world that was built for us by the machines where pretty much it just goes on like we are currently right here. And then you get the other world that's, you know, living in a sewer on the run from these machines that are destroying everything. But the only difference in the Matrix world, you kind of get the choice because you get to see both of them before you ultimately make the decision of the red pill or the blue pill. Somebody tells you about it. you find out, hey, I do want to make this decision or I don't. So there is always, the grass is always greener for certain people wondering what was there and what could have been, but it's not necessarily something that everybody wants. How about you, Nick? What's your number three?
My number three, and I miscounted, I've actually got four songs. My number three is, it's the Beatles song, Octopus's Garden. The line is just, I want to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
How did you miscount? There's like probably five things written down on your phone.
No, I have a number of things written down on my phone. One of them is The Little Mermaid. And nice. One of them is one that I gave to you, so can it.
Can it.
Good song. Though. Octopus's Garden, good song. There's a Muppets version of it. It's also pretty good. It's one of the few Ringo songs that made it big. Kyle?
Yeah.
What's your number two?
My number two is the Muppet movie. The Muppets are traveling to Hollywood to make it big. And I like that sort of tale where it starts off with one person and then they're like, it shows them like recruiting people and going on that and all of them sort of inheriting. I don't know why that sounds so weird. The initial person's dream of going to Hollywood and how like Kermit's inspiring all these people to go to Hollywood. And it's a really cool journey that they all go on.
Yeah. One thing I like about that too, is that when they run into Big Bird, they're like, where are you going? He goes, oh, I'm going to New York for TV. But they're going like across the country for movies. I think it's just like a funny switcheroo. Yeah.
And wasn't that like a crossover from another Disney movie? Like, isn't there a, Big Bird have a own movie?
I forget what it's called, but I don't know if that's a crossover. I think that's later on. I think that was like from the late 80s, maybe.
Okay.
I'll see if I can find it in the meantime.
Dan, what's your number two?
Kind of in the same vein as the last one. The concept of religion is really a, you know, grass is always greener kind of thing. It seems like a lot of religions were based on, anyway, people seeing the kind of life they were in right now and hoping that there was something better one day. And their only guise for something better would be after they died, because people were living like 40 years instead of, you know, 100 now. So that's definitely an example of it, showing everybody imagines this perfect place and everything. But the truth is, we really don't know what happens when we do die. So there's really no...
I like, too, that you mentioned the life expectancy, because it's like a lot of times we, you know, we judge the past and we'll be like, oh, well, they felt this way or this idea is a certain way because we don't agree with it or we don't live that way. And it's like, well, for them, this is a totally, they saw themselves differently. They treated each other. They raised children differently. Everything was different then.
Right. There was no,
made a lot more sense.
There was no like, when I'm 40, I'm going back to college to better my life or anything. No, you were lucky to be alive at that point. So it's definitely something that fits in there. But, you know, everything about human life really is, grass is always greener. We're always trying to better ourselves. We're trying to move into the next best house. We're trying to get the next best job. We're trying to get more money. So our whole lives, your grass is always greener, and we just reflect that on certain things that we do in cinema and everything.
That was like the podcast version of like a badass freestyle. Like,
yeah, I was like,
okay,
it's like, the ultimate answer is humanity. Yeah, like, right. Humanity itself is.
That was actually going to be one of them, but when I wrote religion on the top five, I was like, I can't then do humanity as well. I might as well just touch on it a little bit here.
Yeah.
How about you, Nick? What's your number two?
Just an update. Follow That Bird from 1985.
So it was, or no?
No, it wasn't. Some of the movies from the 70s.
Oh.
My number two is a song called Castle on a Cloud from Les Miserables. It's the little girl cassette singing about this castle on a cloud that she goes to in her dreams. It's a place where she doesn't have to mop up floors and everything is nice. Instead of her being, you know, the poor broke girl who has a shitty life because her mom died of something. TB?
Just a quick TB? Update. I haven't seen Les Mis. I haven't seen it ever on a stage, on a movie, nothing.
So I just spoiled for you that
you ruined the whole movie for me.
Somebody dies.
Oh my god! I hope it's not Wolverine.
I can neither confirm nor deny. Although I did say that it was her mother, but he may play a lady. Kyle, What is your number one example of grass is greener?
My number one was actually inspired by when Dave said, or not Dave, Dan, said The Matrix, the book Ready Player One, which we talk about on the show kind of frequently.
Yeah, well, we pretty get frequently. Fixated on these, yeah. These certain shows that just like, you know.
Yeah, but
eight episodes,
the main character Wade lives in this really crappy area. He lives in these things called stacks, which are basically trailer parks that are stacked on top of each other to make more room. And the whole world has kind of gone to shit because everyone's logging into this online video game for the most part. But it's like a second life for most of these people. And people learn there. They go to school. They have friends. And majority of the people in that story would rather live in this fake oasis than in the real world that they live in. To the point where, like, electing a president in the real world isn't a big deal at all. But, like, when they have an election in the video game, it's, like, people care about that. So it's like, really, when that part comes up, it's really strange that to think that they don't even care who their president is at that time.
Mm.
But, yeah, Ready Player One, I think, is my favorite example of this trope. What about you, Dan?
My favorite example, my number one, is From Dusk Till Dawn. Because the whole time during the movie, George Clooney's telling Quentin Tarantino about this fictional city of El Rey where all these thieves and, you know, murderers, just where criminals go to live this awesome lifestyle where there's no police, there's no nothing like that. And the whole time they're trying to get to this city and they end up in, you know, one of the worst bars in the world, just full of vampires. Everybody gets slaughtered and killed ruthlessly.
Nice.
And they're just trying to get to what they think is paradise, which for thieves would be a, you know, place of thieves. How about you, Nick? What's your number one?
I've actually, sir, do you want to take that as your tap-in number one?
Yeah, sure. I thought of one sitting here and...
you thought of it.
Right. the movie Swingers. I think this is like one of the best examples. And the character played by Jon Favreau, he thinks, you know, you meet him at the beginning of the movie and he's completely miserable and he stays that way for the first good bit of the movie. And he's just broken up with, but he's been broken up with by his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all the way across, you know, the country in LA. He's from New York. And he's just completely pathetic. He can't move on. He can't do anything. He's sitting in his apartment, just opening and closing the refrigerator door. And so basically the whole movie eventually, you know, sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, what's so cool about it? It's a lot like what Dan said. It's a really great example of how a lot of times it's what's right in front of you. All he does is just hang out with his friends, and when it comes time to actually change the biggest problem that he had, he's himself. He just completely acts like himself and goes with what's natural, kind of against what, you know, his lady killer friend played by the young Vince Vaughn does. So,
plus the other thing in that movie that I like is they use Vegas as this place, like they're screaming Vegas, and they think Vegas is going to be awesome, and they go to a shitty casino, they lose a bunch of money, and nothing good really comes from it, only not terrible things, but
yeah, that trip doesn't yield anything. It kind of just,
yeah, like,
it shames him.
People love to shout Vegas, baby Vegas after that movie, but I don't think people have seen that movie because their trip to Vegas sucks. It's like the worst trip to Vegas ever.
Well, if Vegas was like a choose-your-own-adventure book, most of the endings are bad. Like, there's not many good ones that come out of it. You got to really, like, write on the dot to get it.
Yeah, sometimes you go to Vegas, though, and you rob three casinos and you get, like, millions of dollars.
Oh, you meet Mike Tyson.
Yeah, not in Swingers.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Nicolas Cage at first.
Oh. No, I think you die.
Well, Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is... it's kind of a two-way tie, but it's from the same thing. It's from the Book of Mormon. The main character, they have to go on their Mormon missionary trip, and he really wants to go to Orlando. And instead of going to Orlando, he gets sent to Uganda. So a lot of the a lot of the play is about him wanting to be somewhere else because Uganda is not awesome, and Orlando has putt-putt golfing. But the other corollary to that is one of the characters, like the female character, is told by one of the missionaries about Salt Lake City, and to her, Salt Lake City sounds like the greatest place in the world because it's, again, not Uganda. There's not a bunch of like warlords running the place, and not everybody there has AIDS. So to her, Salt Lake City is the best place you could possibly go in the world. So those two things from Book of Mormon are my number one.
Woo!
So those were our top five examples of The Grass is Greener. Do a trailer review after this?
Sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good.
Join us after the break and we'll do a trailer review.
Where'd you get this?
On the shelf.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. A rumbling sound, then three sharp knocks.
Babadook, duck, duck.
That's when you'll know he's around. You'll see him if you look. Nothing bad's gonna happen, Sam.
Did he think that about my dad before he died?
He sees things as they are, that one.
I promised to protect you if you promised to protect me.
Oh, my God. Did he hurt anyone?
The boy has significant behavioral problems.
This monster thing has got to stop, all right? It's just a book. It can't hurt you.
Okay. So that was a trailer for a movie called The Baby Book? Is that what it... No, it's a 2014 Australian horror movie called The Babadook, also called Mr. Babadook. It did play at Sundance this year, and currently, as of this recording anyway, has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Sir, you brought this to us. Why?
You know, it came out last year, and not that many people have heard about it. It came out in Australia, and this is it's finally getting an actual international release, so people can actually see the film. I haven't seen it yet. And I'm actually hoping that our local art house theater will play it. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of making a official request. So hopefully I can do that. I'm not usually impressed by horror movies at all. Usually I'm not scared at all. And for a trailer to kind of, like, I think the international trailer is actually a little less scary than the one that...
The original one.
Yeah, we actually posted the Australian version. And this movie looks pretty terrifying. It looks like the first, like, ghost story with a kid. Some kind of haunting that's actually been worth seeing. I'm not a fan of any of the paranormal activities or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I haven't been impressed with any of these movies lately. Yep. So.
One thing I like about this trailer, and I hope that the movie plays out this way, that it seems very ambiguous as to whether or not there's something wrong. For all we know, it's just like a crazy mom and her crazy kid.
I feel like that's what also makes this movie, the idea of it, really scary, because when someone's not really clear-minded, the fact that they can... You don't know what's real and what's not real. That's what really scares me, or at least like what has recently started scaring me more. Mm-hmm. But my biggest fear would be that they do show whatever is stalking them too much. Like we were saying off recording, if they do show it and keep it on the screen way too long, that's when it starts losing its sort of scariness.
Right, that's my whole thing too, is like, has anybody seen Insidious?
I have. No. Is that the one?
I'm trying to get through it. I mean, it was kind of on.
I mean there the was bad that one guy scene. In that movie is Darth Maul with goat legs.
Yeah.
So that was, I thought, the problem, is that they kept showing this crazy looking thing that you're like, what the heck is this? They should have billed it as like the unofficial sequel to Phantom Menace, where Darth Maul then gets transported to Earth, grows goat legs, starts stalking children. Ugh. That would be a better movie, probably.
I do like that this movie has a child in it. I don't think we see many horror movies that have kids in them.
Haha.
Actually, I
was that tongue in cheek.
Yes, I actually can't think of the last horror movie that didn't have it. Maybe Wreck. Wreck doesn't have a kid in it. It does have a kid in it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any movies that are horror that don't have a kid.
Yeah. This one, it's hard to tell whether it's more about the kid or the mom.
I mean, the first Paranormal Activity didn't have a kid in it.
I just watched one. It's about cults. I'll look it up.
Jesus Camp.
Jesus Camp was a horror movie, wasn't it?
Heavyweights.
Ben Stiller
is scary in that movie. But yeah,
he's terrifying when he's stepping on the glass. Yeah,
the Sacrament. Didn't have any fans. Well, there was.
Yeah,
they weren't characters though. They were just in it.
There's a kid sneaking in there in most horror movies,
but I think they didn't really do anything.
Kids do really add creepiness.
They're in danger at one point, so yeah.
It's not even necessarily that, though, but like I was trying to think of an example, and the Poughkeepsie Tapes came to mind, which is kind of like a found footage movie, mm-hmm. and I was like, there's no kids in this, but I remembered there was a scene where the killer is like videotaping a kid in her front yard and talking to her.
Ugh.
So that brings the creepiness out anyway, just that they're interacting with a child, we think is innocent.
Children do exist in real life.
Sometimes. Not in my house.
saying it's bad. I think it can be very effective. I think it's done extremely well in movies like one of my favorites, The Orphanage.
Yeah, I did get an orphanage vibe from this a little bit. Like that sort of legend of whatever.
Tomas.
Yeah.
Not it. Well, it was another movie I tried watching. I get so bored with most horror movies.
Oh. But The Orphanage isn't even really a horror movie. It's just like a drama that happens to be scary.
Yeah, then I'm really boring.
But there are horror movies that like demand having children in them. Like Sixth Sense wouldn't have been the same if it was a 25-year-old guy who was seeing ghosts. Nobody would have gave a shit.
Yeah.
Children of the Damned. That's another example. You had to have the kids to make it scary.
I kind of would like to see a remake, actually, of The Sixth Sense where it's just like a 40-year-old. And he's like, hey, man. Dude, I'm seeing dead people.
Yeah.
And that's the reaction.
Yeah,
but you would have to have
Kyle's reaction is
Bruce Willis is just like
You would have to have Bruce Willis a lot older though, so you'd have like a 90-year-old man that a 40-year-old was seeing.
Oh,
and the guy,
like it would be Tuesdays with Maury.
You remember the kid who like he shows up as a grown ghost?
Mm-hmm.
He would also be aged as he should be.
And right,
it'd be the same scene.
But yeah,
yeah, that makes sense.
It makes six senses.
Oh,
perfect. I think that's a great place to stop.
That's enough.
All right. Drop so that was episode 55 of On the Tropes. Kyle, if they wanted to learn about us more on the internet, where would they go?
You can go to tvtropes.org. Where they can check out all the tropes that we talk about on our show. Not only this one, but every other show, because that's what we do.
And if you go there, you can click on the little banner on the side that has On the Tropes. That's us.
Yep.
I assume you know that because you're listening already. Sir, where else can they find us?
They could go to onthetropes.podomatic.com and listen to our show, download it. And then they could download it, take it to their friend's house, play it for them.
Oh, yeah. Play it for your friends.
Yeah.
Go over to...
Forcibly.
Yeah, go over to iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you're using and write us a review.
Yeah, Stitchers are on phones, right? Just pull it up on your phone on break.
Yeah.
Pull up your favorite spot. We're always there.
If you're at a stoplight right now, keep an eye for it to change, but...
Yeah, well, if you hit that rolling stop, feel free to just pull that phone right up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no problems there.
But we need those. That's our lifeblood.
And if you do have iTunes or anything, if you subscribe, it just pops right onto your phone as soon as it's available, so...
Yes, falling right into place, Dan. Thank you. And as always, you can go to...
Twitter.
I was going to say Stitcher, but that wasn't the right word. Twitter.com/onthetropes, or you can email us at onthetropes@gmail.com. Do all of those things that we just named. So, as always, I've been your host, Nick, and we have been...
Sir.
Dan.
And Kyle.
And join us next week when we'll again be stuck on the tropes.
We're good.
So, how's it been going?
Good.
Save it for the show.
I mean, I really just meant the show, my cold heart. It was just like, what's the status of the project?
Are we gone?
We're gone.
All right.